I'm disappointed, Jace. I thought you'd come on with like a small cowboy hat or something.
You remember that?
No, 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 we don't. We don't remember it, Jace.
I just brought that out of thin air.
Oh, how dare you, sir? I take umbrage at that.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You're listening to Sapnin Podcast.
Sapnin!
Sapnin!
You're listening to episode 123 of Sapnin Podcast, featuring myself, Sean Smith, and my good friend slash sometimes a rapper friend, Morgan Richards.
Yes, it's me, Morgan Richards. And while ambition might be critical, hope is all we have and all we'll ever know.
There's no fucking might in ambition is critical. Basically, the thing is, with ambition is critical, the title ambition is critical, we took that from Twin Town, where the guy goes, ambition is fucking critical. And then the other one goes, I think it's ambition is critical. There's no fucking in it. So there you go. This week's podcast is a 10th anniversary special for a band called The Blackouts. Third album called Hope. See that? You could swear I knew everything about the band, about how much information I know about them. But yeah, this is about this episode is a special for the 10th anniversary of Hope by The Blackout. And me and Morgan were both blessed with the presence of Gavin Butler, James Richard Davis, aka The Bob, and the mighty Jason Perry.
Yes, getting the band back together, because these podcasts are probably the only way.
You just said getting the band back. Don't give people false hope. Whoa, don't give me false hope. Did we mention? What? You were telling me. We're getting back together.
We'll get to that.
I'm too excited.
We'll get to that. But April 4th, 2011, The Blackout released their crowdfunded, critically acclaimed, and fan-cherished record, Hope. So with this weekend marking its 10th year anniversary, we thought it'd be nice to gather some of the lads together again to take a trip down memory lane. And it's quite an interesting dynamic, because not only is it a collection of former Sapnin Podcast guests, but a look at different aspects at this album cycle. Obviously, Sean, Gavin and Bob have the band insights. But Jason Perry was your resident producer. People will know him as a frontman from A and behind the desk with some incredible other bands like Kids and Glass Houses, McFly and Don Broco. And I bring that kind of fang perspective to it as well, trying to conduct everything and control the chaos as we dive into the album's track listing, the whole Pledge music experience, all the amazing things you did in 2011. And I cheekily ask again about a possible reunion. I'm trying, guys. I'm trying. So
he is trying.
There we
he
go.
He is trying. And all I need to say to anybody who's a fan of The Blackout is keep listening.
Ooh,
what could they mean? That could be anything. Oh my good lord.
But Sean, it's 10 whole years, a decade. Can you believe it? How are you feeling?
I cannot believe it. It's flown by, obviously I miss it. But yeah, this was a very important record for us. I didn't think that we'd get to make it or even get to stay being a band. So yeah, this was a massive, massive moment in the Blackout's history. It's where we kind of found out and finally believed that we had support of people. Because before that, I think we all just thought we'd maybe fluked it. And then, for this, it was amazing to see people come together and want to support the Blackout. So, yeah, this is a real good chat. Thank you very much to Gavin. Thank you very much to Bob. Thank you very much to Jason. We had such a good time with all of those guys. Yeah, it was such a good chat. And, yeah, fingers crossed for other stuff.
Yeah,
in the future.
Yeah, I mean, it's always nice to get you guys together again and like reminisce about some amazing times. Obviously, we did something similar back for episode 26 when we celebrated the best in town. And yeah, it's just nice to have those wholesome moments. But a quick thing, Sean.
Yeah.
A lot of people will link you to hairstyles over the years, you know, in bands and on being in the cover of multiple magazines. You always fronted a different hair, a color or a style or something. But this era of the Blackout was when you decided to have that little pointy blonde bit. I can't describe it. You got rid of the fringe slightly for a little bit and had that pointy bit up, right? You've said before that inspired the likes of Jedward to steal the hairstyle. And in a weird full circle moment, this week, Jedward shaved off that hairstyle and have gone completely bald for charity. So that's a weird coincidence.
Is it? I don't know. I don't know where you're going with that. What's that got to do with Plus, Jed would know it's the 10th anniversary, and he'd be like, we've had this ridiculous haircut for nearly 10 years, man, because of that plonker. Shave it off! Even though, I'd just like to say, just for the lawyer's sake, I genuinely don't believe that Jedward had their hair like mine. Sadly. But they did nick a load of shoes that I was going to buy. I literally went to go and buy a pair of shoes once, and they had worn them the night before on X Factor or The Voice or Pop Stars or TV show they had to bash at. And then I was like, well, I can't have them now because I got blonde hair and look stupid. So if I have them, someone's going to go, whoa, top and bottom, you're doing a Jedward impression, you prick. And I'm like, I'm older than those bastards. Yeah. Oh, tell you what, Jedward, I know you listen every week because you're massive fans, right? So why not come on the podcast and let's have a chat about music, rock music. They must like some rock music. Remember they did that Blink 182 cover?
Yes, they did. Yeah, all the small things.
They did a Blink 182 cover. So that'll be... come on and have a chat to us about all that, even if you don't care or don't know anything about it. I bet you it'll be a laugh. So yeah, Jedward, get in touch. If you're listening to this and you know Jedward, give him a poke for us. If you don't know him, get at him at Jedward Planet on Instagram, Twitter and stuff, I think. Because we'd like him on. I think it would be a chaotic interview.
Oh, it'd be a good laugh. Good laugh for sure. But before we get into this episode, a quick reminder that if you enjoy these podcasts and us putting one out each and every week for your enjoyment, please head over and have a look at our Patreon page, patreon.com/sapnin, to support us and keep this thing going each and every week. And over there, not only is there a whole host of extra rewards like bonus podcasts, a look behind the scenes of how we make things and stories from our individual careers, but you get to be part of the most beautiful thing ever to come out of Sapnin, which is our lovely community of rad awesome people. So that's patreon.com/sapnin. And if you can't do that because times are tough, please go and give us a follow,
at least
on our social media pages at Sapnin.
At least give us a follow, you tight bastards. Also, if times are hard, I'm very, very sorry about that. They're hard for everybody. But yeah, check out patreon.com/sapnin, like you said, or follow us on our socials if you can't be asked to join the Patreon, because it's more than four steps. It's not, it's probably about three. Check out at sapninpod, at sapninpod. That's on Twitter and Instagram, at sapninpod.
Yes, well, just send us a message. We all like to read stuff. And maybe share your favourite memory from the Hope era of the Blackout. But without any further ado, Sean, There's no more waiting. Oh, we better keep on moving.
Jesus Christ.
This is the 10th year anniversary of Hope with yourself, Gavin, Bob, and Jason Perry.
You make the devil inside want to come out.
Whee!
Was that from this album? I don't even fucking know. It was it, Tidy! Fucking Tidy. Devil Inside. Wait, that was our... No, No More Waiting was our Deftones rip-off, wasn't it? It was, yeah. Anyway, have a listen to this. Sat-nin!
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Yes! This week, we have the ever-lovely friends of mine. First off, we have Gavin Butler.
Sappening!
And then the mighty James Bobby Davis.
Sappening!
Bloody hell, that was very enthusiastic, and nobody expected that.
No.
And last but by no means least, the least enthusiastic person I've ever come across, the mighty Jason Perry.
Sappening.
Of course.
Cool for school.
But thank you all for joining us for this special reunion and reminisce of 10-year anniversary of an album you guys did in 2011 called Hope. We're going to have a little chat and dissect everything about that record to really celebrate it. So I just thought to start, if we could go around and get your earliest memories of this era of the Blackout and when everything started with Hope. Because obviously you released The Best in Town back in 2009, and that was a record that elevated the band to a new level. And you left Epitaph after this point. So yeah, let's just go through how the process originally started, if we can.
Someone banded the idea of crowdfunding, wasn't it? And we were a bit dubious about it because it was fairly new at the time. Not a lot of bands or anyone was really, really doing it. So I can remember, that's my earliest kind of memory of the old process, was meeting the Pledge Music guys, I think.
Because I'm thinking of it as a whole now and trying to think of it, you know, in terms of what it ended up being, which we will kind of talk about in a little bit. But the sort of early stages of getting the record together in any kind of way was pretty uncertain and kind of fraught with a lot of potential pitfalls and danger and not really sure and exactly what we're going to do. So exactly like Gavin was saying, as you mentioned in the intro, Morg, we left Epitaph not really it was sort of begrudgingly left Epitaph. We didn't really want to do so because they'd been very good for us, but we were just in a position where the sort of label financial politics of it just wasn't happening for us at that time. And they were just holding their own corner. We don't bear them any ill will or anything like that. But then we found ourselves without the label and the support that we'd had that had been so good for Best in Town. And then we felt not really sure about where we were going to go with it. So, I'm trying to think of the order in which, did we have songs already going? Like, was the record pretty much, you know, up and running as a sort of writing thing by that point when we talked?
Oh, there's songs on the album.
songs on this album. You wrote songs for this album? I can remember us, I'm sure we were in the mindset of, we don't know what the fuck's going on. Let's just write some songs anyway, and then kind of see where that goes. And I'm sure there was some songs in the bag when we went to go see Pledge, I'm sure. Because it didn't feel like a rush, just like when we did the crowdfunding thing, to be like, oh shit, now we got to write an album.
Yeah.
I can't remember it being that.
I think we had some ideas there, and then when Pledge... Because it was Pledge Music that we did it with, wasn't it? I think prior to us, I think there was only Charlie Simpson maybe have been the only person to do it in the UK prior to us, I think.
I think Funeral for a Friend might have done something with them as well.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, okay, cool. So yeah, Funeral for a Friend, Charlie Simpson, and then they came to us. And I remember at first kind of being kind of offended by the offer, to be honest, and going like, well, no, we don't want to like beg our fans to make a record for us. And then I remember sitting down when we sat down with them in the office and they were like, nobody has to buy any of this stuff. You can just put it up there for sale. If they want to buy it and do anything that you guys want to do, that's cool. Otherwise it just doesn't get sold. And we were like, okay, that kind of makes it a bit cooler, I guess. And then when they said, you know, I literally remember sitting there and them saying, right, what do you want? What won't you do off this list? And it was like a list of another band of what they would do. And we were like, oh, we'd do all of that. And they were like, okay, was there anything else you want to add to it? And I remember Matthew going, oh, we haven't all been to the zoo in a while. And then, so we added, oh, let's put Go to the Zoo with the Blackout, you know.
For a laugh.
Yeah, if two people buy it, that means the six of us get to go to the zoo and we get to take two people with us. And we ended up selling out all of them pretty much instantly, which was insane. Yeah, I think we took about 10 people with us to the zoo.
Nice.
there's a video on our YouTube somewhere of it.
John, wasn't there a story where some kid won like a personal gig with the Blackout and you thought you were going to play around some kid's home, and when you got there, he'd hide the Village Hall and sold like 100 tickets?
Yeah, exactly what happened. Yeah. There's not a story like that. It's that story.
I love that. That kid sounds amazing to me. He totally played the whole Pledge system.
Yeah. I love it. He's just gone like, oh my God, what an opportunity to make money. Capitalism, let's go.
He kept my pledge offering and flip it. Amazing money.
I can't remember much of that.
It was just, we showed, like, it was just that, though. It was just like as we arrived, I want to say it was the first one we did. Because we did.
Was it like a church hall?
Yeah, it was like a little town hall. Because we sold five of those, and they were big money. So we, because I just thought to like add to what Sean was saying about like when we saw the list of all the stuff. I can remember the same. It was like the same day or the day after or whatever. We'd obviously gone to London for that meeting. I can remember being in the van going home back to South Wales, and all of us just like spitballing ideas of what we could possibly do, because we were really kind of like of the opinion of, right, well, okay, what can we do? Because we're a bunch of, like, you know, we've always had a kind of good relationship with the people who come to see us anyway. So we're like, all right, what can we do that's not going to be awkward, because we're going to be cool about it and it'll be fun for them to do if they want to do it. So there were all those things. And we're like, yeah, we could just show some people's houses if they can thing it. And we're just, like I said, like going back to that idea of like, oh, we don't want to make it too, you know, like exploitative or whatever. It was like, well, we just make them, we'll put them at a price that works for us. And if people buy them because they want to, they're good. And if they don't shift, they don't shift. But they all went straight away. And then that town hall one was like the first one. So we went all the way down to wherever it was, so somewhere in the south of England. And we drove into the thing. We were like, you know, doing the whole sat nav thing. We were like, right, this is the address, town center. It's in there, isn't it? It's definitely in there. And out he came. Yeah. Hi, guys. So you're like, all right, but. how's it going? He was like, you here for the gig? And we were like, we're here for the private show that you bought.
But we had a few of those, didn't we? Like, we did like a few, like, what else did we do? We did,
there was a lot of them. We kind of chipped in together,
like,
wouldn't
you? Yeah, communal jobs, so where like people, a bunch of friends had like put in like 50 quid together and then got like an acoustic show or a gig or something like that. And I was like, they were pretty good.
Yeah, there was one semi-strange one where we turned up and played acoustically in someone's house, and the audience was the person's mother, a dog, and him. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I think that was the first ever one we did.
What was that, Jace?
He said he's done real shows like that.
but this was just in someone's living room. We turned up, I reckon. It was just so weird. I remember us trying to just get in and out as soon as we possibly can. We DJ'd at Alex Tompkins' 16th birthday party in her house. Remember that?
I was trying to think of her name the other day because I was talking about that story to someone.
We DJ'd her house, and her family made like a big deal of it, and her dad threw like a fancy dress party, and I remember her dad being drunk and he tried to give us money before we left. Remember, like, he was like, he was like maybe an area manager of a McDonald's somewhere or something like that.
You're conflated two stories then, because I think that was...
Am I?
Yeah, it was another one of the shows, unless it happened twice, but I distinctly remember one individual's father being very enthusiastic about trying to give us some extra cash.
Yeah, you are fact. Right. It was two different stories. Yeah, he was the head of...
Yes, he was.
His father was the head of McDonald's. What I've confused you is I tried to give him basically free money by giving him the advice, make the double sausage egg McMuffin for 24 hours a day. Yeah, no, the one you're talking about. Yeah, I remember it was somebody's father, and he came out, and like we all had a chat to him, and, you know, he asked us about what was going on, and we explained this, you know, the pledge music thing to him. And I think he was like, he thought we were like down and out destitute. So he was like, I'm sure he tried to hand snoz like £2,000 worth of £20 notes.
He put it into his hand, and then snoz went, no, you're fine. And then he was like, do it, you know, like the sort of like slightly aggressive generosity where you're like, please don't kill me or give me money. Both of these outcomes are awful. And then I think snoz said eventually this, like, he sort of, snoz sort of talked him down. He was like, stop giving me money, it's fine. And then so he was like, all right. And then he went away, and then snoz packed all his drums down, and then he put the roll of notes like in one of his cases, in a kind of like, you're not going to get rid of me that easily, Lawrence, take my cash. But people were like unreal about it, like all the way through. Everyone was always, because we just like people, like at that gig the guy was just like, so what's the deal then? And we were like, we were just up front with people. We were like, well, it's, this is how much it costs to do it, and we don't have a way of doing it, so we're doing this.
Well, how much did that record cost? Do we have any idea?
We didn't walk away with money in our back pocket from it, but I'm sure the pledge amount was 20.
Not in the grand scheme of things.
I would say 25 to 30.
Everybody concerned in it very cheaply.
Yeah.
Mate rates.
Yeah, and I know you and
Adam.
Adam did it very, very cheap.
Yeah, Claire Coleman said, you know, pledge would have do it. So yeah, did it half price, and got studios cheap as well.
So that was only £500,000 he charged, which was nice.
Yeah.
Friends as well, like. But we did do, just before we get into this, and I guess we get Jason in full time to the chat, there was two more pledge things we should talk about. One was the party where we turned up to the girl's house, and when we turned up with all our gear, because it was a full band gig, they put us in the corridor between the house and the swimming quarters.
That's right, yeah.
Remember that? And then when we were talking...
Summer house.
Yeah, I was talking to the girl whose party it was, and I was like, oh, thank you so much for having us, you know, absolutely appreciate you being a fan. And she was like, oh, I never heard you. And I was like, you are. And she was like, oh, yeah, someone just mentioned that you were doing it, so we thought we'd put a gig on. So... And then I was like, all right, cool. And then we ended up at that pool party. She had a pool party after it, which was everybody was involved with, which was mad. So that was a strange one. And And of course, the zoo with Snoz taking a nosedive.
The first time I heard of the whole pledge caper was the phone call from Raw Power, from Claire, about the zoo. Which is about a week before we started pre-production on the album. So back to you guys for the zoo story.
Gareth, I'm faster than a cheetah, Lawrence. There was a live experience thing where you could try and... It was like a speed trap, yeah, wasn't it? So you'd run as fast as you could and see if you could run as fast as a cheetah. And Gareth...
No, so, also...
You can't. Oh, yeah, no.
Okay, save me some time there.
Yeah.
You can't.
Spoilers.
Snoz can't run. Apparently, Snoz can't run at all.
Yeah.
He can't run like a man, never mind like a cheetah.
Well, plus, that's the problem. He tried to get into the cheetah pose.
That's what it was. He went all four.
Never go all fours.
Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, he tried to run faster than a cheetah, fell over, went into like a forward roll. He actually saved it. It looked quite well.
Yeah, because that's the thing. Because he did the forward roll, and then as he came out of it, he put his arms up in a like victory pose. And I don't know whether it was that motion that did it, but he... What was the actual injury?
Did he snap his clavicle or something?
His collarbone or something, wasn't it? It was something to do with his shoulder.
Yeah, I think it was... Yeah, either collarbone or clavicle.
What did the fans say at that point? Were they embarrassed?
It all got pretty frosty and awkward, I think, because we were all kind of like...
We had such a good day as well.
Such a great day. Oh, he fell over. That's funny. And James, oh, he's hurt himself a bit, though. Oh, quite a lot, though. Oh, seriously. Oh, he's got to go to hospital. He's got to go to hospital. Boys, he's got to... What do we do? What are we doing? Phone with... Can you phone the hospital now? What are we going to do? What are we going to do with the app? And so they were just a bunch of fans like,
I can imagine one fan coming back and missed it all.
Hey, guys, what's going on? Oh, my God, cheetah speed trap. Who's doing it first? So we're all just like...
No.
Don't do it, bro. Don't do it.
Yeah, but I imagine, Jason, you must have been very, like, in panic at that point, getting the phone call from Claire and saying, you know, we haven't got a drummer for this record.
Well, of course, I booked Air Studios at a really good rate. And then I'd fundamentally done the whole pledge sell thing and said, look, can we get in for 4 days? And there's a window at Air where we could get in. Air's a pretty expensive, you know, studio.
Explain to some people who may not know where Air is and what kind of studio.
I think it's Abbey Road and it's Air, but it's where they do all the Hans Zimmer strings and it's got the best mixing desk in the world in Air. It's got a Neve Montserrat desk. There's only two in the world and it was made for the Air Studios when it was on the island of Montserrat, where Rush recorded, Power Windows and Dire Straits recorded Money for Nothing, and that just a big 80s studio that was really famous. And obviously that got destroyed in a hurricane 1 year, and that desk ended up back at Air Studios in...
Bloody hell, that's a powerful hurricane.
Oh yeah, blew all the way back. No damage.
And straight in. Past George Michael to the door. Straight in.
Plugged yourself in as well.
I couldn't believe it. Wired yourself up.
And then somebody, as it landed, somebody at the back of the road went, good Lord, that's a Careless mixing desk. And George Michael misheard that and recorded Careless Whisper. And that's how that happened.
He was there that day, wasn't he? In those 4 days. George Michael was upstairs in those 4 days we were there.
He was, yeah.
Well, yeah, let's let Jason finish his story and then we can bring up Matthew camping at the bottom of the stairs.
Oh, we'll
for
definitely
Michael.
Get to that. We'll definitely
two,
get to
there's
that.
Only two of them anyway, and one of them's in Air, and I'd been in Air, I think, 2 weeks before doing some other band, and they said, look, you can come back for two. So I was really concerned. It's like, if we miss this 4 day window for recording drums, and then we were going straight from Air to Angelic, which I'd got for a good rate as well. And Angelic was busy for like 3 months after that. So I was like, right, if we don't go record this album in 4 days or whatever it was, it's like a week before, 2 weeks before, we're not doing it this year. Oh, you're not doing it with me. In Air.
Was it Claire that called you or was it me? Because I remember I phoned you.
Yeah, and you called me and I thought you were joking. You left a message. And then Claire called me and I went, oh, that's funny. Strange, phoned me with a gag. And, yeah, he's not joking.
We'll get to the fine replacements you had for Snoz on the record in just a little bit. But Jason, I mean, despite the phone call and thinking it was a gag and everything, obviously this was your second time working with the guys. this time around, did you feel like there's any different approach at your end, knowing how to work with them and their personalities and everything with Hope? I mean, how different was working on this record for you?
Well, I said at the end of the first one I made, the experience is so horrible. The only reason I agreed to was because Snoz was in the band. And I said to Claire, I just want to record Snoz again. So that's the only reason I want to do this record. That's not funny, is it? That's rubbish.
I enjoyed it.
You laugh at any video.
I will.
The first one was really good. And I love the Black. I think I had as much fun, if not more fun, recording the Blackout when we went to Texas as anything I'd ever done before. And I loved every second of it. So I couldn't wait to do another one. And one thing for me, and it is important, just to sound a bit boring, is that you need to go somewhere on your next record, and you can never repeat an experience, I've found. And it's never the same. So, you know, I had to make it clear to the band that if we're going to do this, we need to step it up a bit and step up the songwriting and step up the messaging and just step it all up. Go to the studio, go for this sound. And they did that with the lyrics and Hope and everything. And it started to come together. And I was like, oh, it's going to be great. I can feel like we could step this up. And it's really good for me, like, you know, to get involved with the songs a bit more. And because the first album, I just done it in a practice room with you guys, and I think we worked pretty quick on the songs. I think the first day we'd gone through like three songs, and just kind of getting to know each other, and we'd done three or four songs a day, and then we went and recorded it pretty quick, and then we ended up that miserable doing the vocals in a mushroom. Don Brock always called that Mushroom After Dark, because after 6 o'clock, it's just the weirdest place ever. And all the local bands come in, and I remember doing that, and so I thought, yeah, we can't do that again. So yeah, I couldn't wait, really. You know, I said to Claire, I'll do whatever it takes to make it, as long as I can't do it for free, but I'll do it for as much as I can. The Blackout is great to work with, and then the songs came together really quick in that pre-production week, and then we obviously had to get the kind of step drummer in.
Yeah, we ended up getting in contact with Thomas Winch, who at the time was in Hexes with Daniel P. Carter, and Stamp. He was formerly
Maroon, Tom. Maroon. He was, never yeah, we since.
Did. Well, all right. Well, let's not make well, that.
Did we ruin him, or did you ruin him?
Ah, good thinking, Gav. Nice, Gav.
Keep drumming, Tom Winch.
It wasn't the last song, wasn't it? I was like, mate, we've got to do one more song. And he's like, my hand's going to give out if I do one more song. And he did it, and his hand gave out. He didn't drum for years after that.
Yeah.
Oh.
I don't know if I've seen him back since, but yeah.
I've seen him as a human being, but he's not, like you said, he's not drummed since, which is...
No, I mean, genuinely, you genuinely hurt him.
Yeah, no, I was another one, because it was a lot, I had the same, like, feeling of, like, the same like process of like emotions going through it with Tom and his arm at the end of that session as I did with Snoz at the Zoo, where I was kind of like, oh, you hurt a bit. No, you really hurt. He's like, mate, it's proper. And we're like, oh, fuck. Because he did an amazing job, as you can hear on the record. It sounds fucking brilliant because he's a great drummer. And so it was just that kind of thing of like, oh, shit, we're really... But, you know, like, just it became but over
we,
time.
We went down to Wales to do a week in Wales. Is that what we did? So Snoz and Tom were together in a room with me, and we were just going for all the parts. And you guys,
well, we had Philip Jenkins do four of the songs, didn't we? As well,
it was like
Phil did four.
Yeah, it was like half and half.
He did a bunch of rehearsals with us down in Music Box in Cardiff. Yeah.
Tom did come down as well at least once, I think. He must.
Phil's a brilliant drummer. Love Phil.
Yeah,
lovely.
Yeah, they're both great, really great drummers.
Yeah, that was good. That worked out. It was two contrasting styles, and it really helped the record. Snoz, you know, I've got to say as well, genuinely, and he's a lovely guy, as we know, but Snoz was amazing. He was so helpful and positive about the whole thing and pragmatic. He's like, look, what's done is done. I've got to do my bit to help the record. And he's a bit like when, you know, a footballer gets subbed in a game, but they're still shouting from the sidelines. He was like that. And
well, he was in with all the sessions with them, wasn't he? He wasn't just did not come. He was there, and
yeah, he absolutely took ownership of all of that. Like all of those drum parts are Snoz's drum parts through another body. Like it's just like do that bit, do that bit, do that bit. No, this is what I would do here. So there were like a couple of little bits where he would have said, all right, you've got the like a little bit of sort of, you know, wiggle room to do your own kind of thing. But for the most part, he made a big like conscious effort to maintain that it sounded like the stuff he'd have done if he'd done it. And that's what we wanted, because as great as those other two drummers are, we wanted it to sound like our drummer. So
yeah,
it was great that he was so like,
you
just
can't
like
tell us anything on the record. You really can't tell. It does sound like Snoz playing.
Yeah.
They both did an amazing job. Yeah, Snoz was brilliant.
There's a video on our YouTube somewhere where I did a small interview with Tom. And he kind of explained like the process of how he's trying to pretty much not copy Snoz, but to do his best, you know, to kind of encapsulate what Snoz did with drums, like.
Yeah. Nice. So we've kind of covered the preempt of going to the studio and the writing of the record and everything. But if we go to the release, April 4th, 2011, I remember this quite fondly. I remember going to get the record from HMV on CD, because believe it or not, guys, not to make you all feel really old, I was 15 when that record came out. So I was prime. So I was a prime marketing candidate for it. But I wanted to know, like, really the legacy that you all feel attached to this record, because we've mentioned before The Best in Town really set things up and established the band in a lot of different ways. Did you feel a lot of different pressure for writing this one, especially after leaving the label and everything? Because from a fan's point of view, it seemed that Hope connected on a deep emotional level with a lot of fans as well.
Well, I think we were kind of lost. That's how Hope kind of came about. The name Hope was just all off the back of, like, we left Epitaph or whatever, and we were kind of lost and in the wilderness. But we knew that we definitely wanted to record again with Jason. We knew how that process would go, because, like I've said before on here, I think, like, The Best in Town, when Jason first came in and got involved in the songwriting, I remember, you know, being a little bit, what the fuck? Who the fuck is this coming in now telling me what to fucking write on my songs? Fucking prick. And then he would go, yeah, but if you just say Children of the Night constantly over the end, it'll the song will be better. And I was like, fuck off. And then I listened to it and I was like, he's exactly right. So it became, yeah, like he, by then he was this, like, to me, Jason was the seventh member.
A bigger level of trust between everyone at that point, between you and me, I think, where you felt like you were in safe hands, and you know that I love you as people and as a band. So I'm not going to do anything to ruin your band. That's really important, isn't it?
I love this record. This is my favourite Blackout record, easily. That's not to say that I don't like Starlet Pie, but I don't like... I love Best in Town as well, and I think Wolves is great, but Hope is the one for me, because it felt like... I think I talked about this the last time I was on here, but I've only got three stories, so I'm going to have to tell it again. I remember the first day that you came down to Music Box for Best in Town, Jace, and we were fucking about with some bits and bobs about some ideas, and we just had this fast, like, just throwaway, like, thrashy little punk tune that we were just like, oh yeah, we just want to have it be like Babe, like, by Glassjaw. We just want it down the end of the album. We just want it to be a thing. And we played it to you. This was like within like maybe 2 hours of meeting you. So you sat down, you're like, oh, let's hear what we got then. So we played You Nothing by A as a joke, got that out of the way. And then we actually started playing songs we've actually written. And like the first thing was you play this like thrashy number through, and you're like, you listen to it, you're like, yeah, cool, all right. Well, you can whack a chorus on that and you could change it completely. And like it maybe took us like, I don't know, 90 minutes, 2 hours or something, and it was like the bones of Shut the Fuck Up a Gut were there, which is just like one of the best tracks on that record. So like from that point, I think we'd gone, all right, this just changes the game, having someone like you in the fold to be able to explain what can be done with songs, to have like an outside like perspective on it and stuff. So from my point of view, throughout the process of writing the songs for Hope, there was always a kind of like, what would Jason do? Little thing on the corner, which I think set us all in really good stead, because one, it meant that we all refined our like songwriting and our approach to it. And then when the songs came to you, it seemed like you had less to do in terms of like overhauling the whole like structure of it. You were just there to do like cherry on the top stuff. It was just like, well, here's a little sprinkling of something you haven't thought of. Here's a magic.
Yeah, the songs
moment.
Are definitely in better shape. When we started doing pre-production for Hope, yeah. Remember? Because I remember we all went to Harvester one night and I remember sitting with Sean and we'd come up with this bonkers idea for a song. I forget which song it was now. But we're like, yeah, let's go back and try it. And yeah, did we go to Harvester?
It sounds like the sort of disappointing establishment we would have frequented, yeah. Bunch yeah. of limited fun.
Yeah, you got all the rappers who were like, yeah, we went to Nobu and we talked yeah. about it. We went to Harvester and we had the free salad bar. Yeah.
And then we sat Which, down no, the river by the no. ducks.
Think how absolutely fucking insane that salad bar is now. In the world
it's,
we live in
it's
now.
Still there.
Like, imagine going to it's been there for a year.
Yeah, but it's just, yeah, you can't go to that salad bar again because it's just going to be.
No.
Anyway, yeah, kill that. Carry on. Sorry, cheers.
No, but that's it. The songs were in better shape and they felt bigger and more rounded. I definitely remember that. And it felt like you'd grown into your own body a little bit. Like, oh, we're a successful band now. We can sound like it. Give yourself permission to be a bit bigger. And grown to your body a little bit. That was really good to know.
Yeah, was the song The Storm, by the way? Because I feel like that was the one on the album which was furthest away from the Blackout's original sound and meaning, was The Storm, which ultimately went on to be possibly my favourite song on the record as well.
I don't know. I remember me and you doing a Fresh Prince of Bel-Air rap over a song and going... Actually, that sounds
just use that.
Right.
Just use that.
Well, yeah, you turned to me and went, "Can you do that?" And I went, "No, because that's Will Smith's." And then you went, "Can we get Will Smith on a song?" And I went, "Well, that seems very unlikely." And then you said, "Do you know any rappers?" And yeah, just been introduced to High Roar by again Daniel P. Carter.
Yeah, that turned out really well. I love that song, and I like the video as well. When you're in the truck, I like it when the Blackout bounce. Like the Blackout always had a bit of a. Well, not always, but that's the Blackout that I thought, well, when I first met you, maybe that song you're talking about, Bob. And he's like, yeah, this is good. This is what I expect from a South Wales band. It's great. It's good. Then all of a sudden, we've got this like almost like Faith No More kind of groovy bounce that we could go to. I remember thinking, oh, this is good. We can get a bit more of that into their sound. And that song's got that, hasn't it? It's got a real kind of bounce to it.
I always think of whenever you talk about, whenever like I think about the kind of like songwriting thing, there's always two arm movements that I always think about when I think about you. One is that, which you can't see because this is all, but that's just bouncing one hand or like that. And then the other one is swinging your arms in a sort of like languid, sort of like wide strut. Those were always your two like tempo checks. It'd be like, it should be that speed. And because we were always a fucking fast as fuck band as well. So we were always like, we'd always play stuff faster live anyway. So I'm pretty sure we've played I'm a Right, You're a Fucking Right quite close to the speed of sound in the past. Jesus Christ. All right. So, so we always used to play too fast anyway. But then that was you, like every time you came to see us, we'd be like looking across, you'd be like, just slow down. Just slow down.
Bob, you're the cleverest musician I've probably ever met. If you did play a song faster than the speed of sound, would you not hear it?
Yeah, you'd finish it before you started. Science, Chase.
What would happen?
I don't fucking know.
Of course you do.
Oh, do I? Oh, good. Ah, oh, good.
Of course I do. Well, now you've told me.
You wouldn't hear it, would you?
I don't know,
<James. laughs> I don't know.
No.
What a deal breaker.
Oh, yeah, I know, yeah. Shut it down, it's done. It's over.
what about you, Gav? What's your how do you see Hope compared to the other albums in the Blackout's legacy?
Just to echo Bob's sentiment, really, it's one of my favourites as well.
I thought you got more handsome on Hope, Gav.
Slightly more handsome.
I thought you peaked handsome than the Hope.
But I peaked at Hope. Really, it all really, went downhill really then.
Sparkly.
No, it's like Bob said, the songs had grown, we'd grown, and it just felt, I don't know, it just felt easier when we were doing it for me. Like I had a good idea of where things were going in my head, it personally at least.
Yeah. I think that's one of the things about it, is that it's sort of unified by a certain sense of, like, there's like a unified theme in the lyrics, and there's a unified theme in the music as well. Even though the music's kind of quite dynamic and quite diverse in comparison to something like The Best in Town, which, although there's loads of good songs for The Best in Town, it's pretty one note. It's all like pretty similar tempos. It's all pretty similar vibes. Fast, 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 slow at the end, which is great, but we'd done it a bunch and we wanted to do some more stuff. So like, it felt like we all kind of just had it in our heads. Cause I don't ever really remember us sort of like sitting down and be like, let's make an album that sounds like this. We just wrote a bunch of songs and they all just sounded like those songs. And we went, okay, they all fit together in a kind of weird way.
We had fun recording it, didn't we? It wasn't the experience of going to Texas. It was the experience of going to a posh studio. Mm. But we still had a good time, I remember. I remember Sean Gordon came and playing some stuff back. And I remember feeling really proud of what I was playing back to him. It's always good when an outsider comes, because songs sound really boring and slow when an outsider walks in the room.
Yeah, yeah.
But they didn't. I was like, oh, this record's going to be great.
I felt like that. Going back to your point, Morg, about like the day of release, like that was like my feeling of like when I knew that record was coming out, I felt that same feeling that you're talking about, Jace. I was just like, that's a good record. People are going to like that. It's fine. Like, it was just, I just felt all right about it.
Oh, yeah, we did it over three studios as well, didn't we? So we did it over A, Angelic, and then we recorded the vocals in the yard, which was just me, Gavin, and Jason.
Down there.
Yeah, downstairs somewhere.
Downstairs, yeah.
Was Angelic the keyboardist from Jamiroquai's place?
Yeah, Toby died now.
Yeah,
yeah, he's passed away, hasn't he? I'm going to say he passed away not long ago.
Bless him.
Yeah, remember? Yeah, because when we got there, literally a couple of days before us, N-Dubs were there, weren't they? Because they had N-Dub stuff set up everywhere, and they had, what's her name? Not Felicia, is it? It's something like that, though.
Talisa.
That's it, yeah. Talisa, they had her vocal channel set up with Auto-Tune already on, because they recorded with it on, like, from the start. Like, they would record all her vocals with that. So yeah, I remember going in, and I think we went out satellite watching one night in Angelic, if I'm right.
ISS coming over.
Yeah, Ailey Connolly came, and we all went out and saw the satellite. I remember these strange moments. And
any meals? Normally I remember loads of meals, but I don't remember us having meals there. And like meal banks.
It was like self-catering, wasn't it? And I think we were kind of like a bit, we sort of just did our own thing. I think we all just made our own food as and when we could. So there wasn't like a...
From what I remember, it felt like it was sponsored by Chocolate Obnobs. That's so... this album brought to you by Chocolate Obnobs.
I remember doing the vocals and in the yard. And I remember we carved out good room for the vocals on this record. A lot more space for you and Gav, to be you and Gav. And I tried to make a lot more of you two, in a way that I'd done with McFly before, and right, utilize two singers a lot more than, you know, Sean screams a bit and Gav sings a bit and Sean screams what Gav just said. There's a lot more to it than that this time, I felt,
yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
And, I think me and Sean had the day where Sean was getting frustrated with me, and, I think he's... Did you? Well, Bob stormed out and did a lap of honour in the field doing a guitar solo. And I think it might have been because I was... I don't know why. Bob was trying to play a part.
It's probably because I'm an arsehole, Jace. It's normally that.
No, it's because I do this really annoying thing, and I've done it loads, and I know my own kids with it. But when it means something to somebody to get it in one take, I can trivialise that a little bit and just go, yeah, whatever... It's not that important. Like, let's do it in three takes or whatever.
Yeah.
It means a lot to this guy to get it in one take. And I think he's had enough of me rolling my eyes going, mate, I'll just comp... And he's had enough. You put your guitar down and gently walked out and stormed down the field and came back.
Gently walked. Okay, yeah, it was one of my better tantrums. Like, it was one where I managed to... I didn't go full six-year-old. I like how you talked about that. You were like, see, when I have to deal with other children...
well,
No. Now, see, I've understood, having dealt with babies, what you were going through as an adult in your 20s. So I thought I'd give you some warm milk and rub your belly a little bit, then you calm down, do the guitar solo.
And burp you a bit.
Alright, let's go.
Those can be nice and try and have a good time, but in the back of my head, I've always got my eye on the clock and your budget.
Yeah.
Without trying to tell you that. And I think I put some pressure on Sean one day as well, and he just had enough. And he stormed out. Heard him storm out. He went, oh, I'm off home. And he had a big suitcase with him. He couldn't quite get it out the door. He had to come back in again, as I mean. He bought me loads of sweets.
Oh, I remember buying you sweets. I bought you a big jar of sweets, and they were we were in London, so they were expensive.
It's always funny to hear those kind of stories like back and out of context, because you just sound like such tits when you're just like, you remember when you got really frustrated trying to do some, you know, made up guitar parts for a bit of fun on a record, and you're like, but at the time, there's just like you said, like the stuff, like the pressure you're putting on yourself to like do it all as you think you should do it, or to blah 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 blah.
No, but I'm saying, Bob, it's my fault, not your fault.
Oh, good.
It's
don't worry about it.
There's always pressurized bits in studios and bits where and sometimes I can just dumb it down and trivialize it a little bit. It means more to the person singing or playing than I give it credit for sometimes.
Yeah, I think, but both those things have to exist, like they have to coexist, don't they? Because if you weren't there pushing that thing in that direction, then we probably wouldn't get it done, and we certainly wouldn't get it in the time, and we certainly wouldn't come and, you know, within the budgets that we had to kind of hit. So like, we all needed those little bit, like we needed to pull in the opposite direction sometimes to make sure that we were both fighting.
It always happens.
Yeah, exactly. For the most part, it was like, you're right. It wasn't like, it didn't feel as much of a, like a flat out fucking laugh as making Best in Town did. But I think that was because we were a little bit more like focused on what we were doing as well. We were like, let's make a really good record, because we got it.
And we were all in these studios for such like a finite amount of time, rather than we had 2 weeks. We had, literally had 2 weeks in Texas. And you know, I spent a day shitting and sicking, so that, you know, we could literally waste days there. Whereas I think, you know, like we said, we had air for 4 days. You know, Angelic as well. We didn't have that for very long.
We
had
10 days, not long, and then we went to the yard for 2 weeks.
It wasn't even like 2 full weeks. It was Monday to Friday. Two lots of that, like.
Yeah, I never want to work weekends, do I? So.
Is there any other studio stories? I know, like I've said this before about Matthew. When Matthew wasn't doing guitar parts in Air, he was sitting outside trying to get a look at George Michael coming in, because apparently George Michael was upstairs.
Did he meet him? Did he meet? Not meet him?
No.
I think they saw
him. Did he walk past
him? They just said they sort of got visual confirmation that he exists.
We have eyes on.
Because Adam, Adam, our engineer, had worked with him a bunch, hadn't he? So I remember Matthew asking Adam all of the George Michael questions.
Michael Jordan.
Keep asking about Michael Jordan.
Oh no, sorry. That's Michael Jordan. What's your favourite George Michael song?
The Slam Dunk.
Yeah.
The Chicago Bulls. What?
Yeah, what?
That doesn't make sense.
You took it personally. Oh, good.
Yes. Do we have any other... I remember somebody else coming in and saying that we were recorded in the room that Liam Gallagher got up on the desk and pissed into the desk.
No, he laid across that desk. And that desk is priceless, as I said earlier, in the really entertaining book about desks. He's only one of them in the world. So I think, that desk is a bit like... You go near him, he's like, whoa... But talking of desks, upstairs in the SSL room where I first met Adam, the engineer, one of our friends, is amazing. He was mixing a Matthew P album for us up there. And going there at night, and I think George was coming in the next day or something. And Adam told me this great story that he said he's got the same desk at his house, but he just comes to air because he just wants to hang out and smoke weed all day. And that's all he does.
My man. George need help with that? Does he need help? I could. Oh, he's, no, he's brown bread. Never mind.
Oh, these days, no.
Yeah, he's a bit busy now. But yeah, after... I'm just looking at the track listing of the album now, and there's some corking tunes on there.
Let's refresh us.
See if we can guess the track list in order.
Number one, boys. What's number one?
I know this.
The Final Countdown, is it?
Yeah. No, it's Ambition is Critical countdown. Is the first song.
Ambition is critical. The video we filmed on tour with Limp Bizkit.
Oh, yeah.
So if anybody wants to go back and have a look at that video that's on the YouTube, there will be members of Limp Bizkit in and around that video.
That's when the thing was happening as well. When the Kickstarter went live, we were on tour with him. I remember, I think we were in Portugal maybe, and that's when it went live, and we were just refreshing the page going, fucking hell. People actually care.
Yeah, people are buying stuff. Unbelievable. What's
because
wrong
I came out on that tour with you, didn't I, for a few days? Because that's when your mate Snail Durst, remember, he went to Double Tapping and he snailed him.
Snail.
And down to Will I Am at Metropolis a few months ago. It was one of the best moments of my life. Will I Am came into our room because he's a friend of Danny's because of the voice. And he was sitting there and I was like, oh, nice to meet you, Will. He went to fist bump me and I snailed him. And then I'm going to go leave and smell people. And he just walked around Metropolis smelling people.
I remember we were in Lowlands Festival. We were at some festival anyway, and Matthew and Dizzy Rascal basically played rock, paper, scissors with handshakes. Hand to fist, no. Hand to fist, no.
Yeah, it was rock, paper, scissors, yeah. And then they both agreed on a handshake.
Yeah, they went with a handshake at the end, and then walked in different directions and said, let's speak of it again, yeah.
but no, I mean, Sean mentioned the track listing, and I've got it here. There's 11 tracks on the recording. Obviously, you did a bunch of covers afterwards for kind of a bonus and deluxe version. But it goes, Ambition is Critical, Never By Your Side, Higher and Higher, Hope, This Is Our Time, The Last Goodbye, No More Waiting, The Devil Inside, You're Not Alone, Keep On Moving, and The Storm. Out of all of those tracks, which ones in particular stand out to you guys that you have the most fondest memories of, or just even tracks that maybe you thought could have been single contenders but it didn't happen? I mean, just talk to us about those tracks in particular.
I was holding back. I was holding for the silence.
That's it. Nobody's got anything they want to say. Guys. No, that's fine. That's perfect.
They all definitely happened and they're on the record. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Higher and Higher is probably my Higher and Higher or The Storm, I think, are my favourite songs off this, mainly because Higher and Higher was so fun to play live. The video is fantastic. Hyro's great on it. And it connected every time with the crowd. So much so that we did a live CD from when we played the Roundhouse, where we play Higher and Higher twice at the end because we enjoyed playing it so much.
Yeah, that's a big song for me. I love that song.
What else is there? We did No More Waiting, which is our ode to the Deftones. We've got You're Not Alone, which I am not even on in the slightest,
right,
I don't think.
Let's talk about this, because Sean and I have had private conversations about it.
I don't think I am, but...
So what goes on here? Because I've listened to it a few times today, trying to decipher it. I hear Jason as the backing in the chorus.
Of course you do. Of course you do.
He loves that.
Is Sean on the track?
We come back into the studio. What are you doing, Jason?
Nothing.
What have you got a mic for? Oh, just looking at it.
Just got this SM7 and...
Oh, it's sung on every record I've ever made. Every record.
I know, I love it. I love it. Well, I was playing... Well, funnily enough, the covers that Morgan mentioned, we ended up going to the studio again, didn't we, to record the covers, because I want to say Cooking Vinyl thought that if we did a cover that it would blow up and we'd be huge. Who had done it? Somebody had done it at the time where they'd come out and brought a cover out and it had gone bonkers. And
that
I think.
The thinking behind it. I think they were hoping for it to go a bit viral or something like that, weren't they?
Yeah, so we ended up doing Lump by Presidents of the United States, Party Hard, Fight for Your Right to Party was another one we did in the studio, and one of the best covers we ever did, Save Tonight.
Who produced that then? I didn't do any of those.
No, you didn't.
No, we did that.
It was EMI,
Yeah, that's what it was. Publishing had sent us down to do it, yeah.
You came down one day, though.
Yeah, he's on Save Tonight. If you listen to the vocals in Save Tonight, Jason's all over it. So
that's
he came to it. I bet you anything. I bet you however much money Don Broco are going to pay you for a next album. I bet you that amount you were on Save Tonight by the Blackout / Eagle Eye.
If you lose that, Sean, you're in trouble. Of these songs, I'll tell you what I'm looking at now, right? And looking through this track listing, I'm looking at how many of the absolute bangers on this record were created by Mr. Reese Lewis.
Oh, really?
This is Reese's record in a lot of ways. Ambition is Critical is Reese's. Higher and Higher is Reese's.
Well, it was called, originally, it was called Black Eyed Reese, wasn't it? Higher and Higher.
That's right. That's a song that we were talking about in The Harvester, Black Eyed Reese.
Yeah, Jason thought it sounded a bit like the Black Eyed Peas. And because Reese had come up with a riff, it was called Black Eyed Reese. For
and You're Not Alone was his as well. And so was The Storm. Like, Reese was a hit machine on this one. Like, he really came out into his own as a songwriter, which is great. But just looking through them, they're just like, oh, wow, yep. Bangers all the way through. But there's a lot of really good tunes on here in a lot of different, like, I just like the variety. Like, you've got songs like The Last Goodbye, and then you've got something like No More Waiting, and then it goes straight into something like The Devil Inside, which is the thing of, like, when all those bands in, like, the early 2000s would be like, it's the heaviest stuff we've ever done and the most melodic, which just means it's just, like, default new album sentence. But this was the heaviest stuff we've ever done and also the most melodic. So, you know, jokes on me or them or all of us, I'm not sure. But anyway, the point is there's songs on the record and some of them are good. But what do you got?
Fair. But I was going to, like, talking about that kind of lyrical theme throughout as well. I mentioned that connection from a fan's point of view because I just always remember a lot of people who I went to see to gigs with and seeing you guys at that time, and obviously the years afterwards when a lot of my friends were getting old enough to get tattoos, there was a lot of Hope tattoos or things that they were getting. So it seemed that it really resonated on a deeper level with a lot of fans. Did you feel that a little more with this record, or was it just for you because you were at a point now and you were doing it so long, it just seemed natural?
No, I think the record came out of, like we said, it was called Hope because we were hoping that it would happen, really, because, like, with the Pledge thing. And I think as soon as we released the Pledge thing and we, like Gavin said, we saw money coming in or whatever, we realised that that people were on side and people must like us. They like us.
Yeah, I think what I was saying about that feeling, it really, like, validated us. Like, that sort of feeling of confidence I was talking about earlier when, like, the day when the record was released, and I was like, yeah, well, I'd be all right. That sort of started from that day with that Kickstarter, because when we saw, not Kickstarter, excuse me, the Pledge thing, because when we saw how amazing the response was to that, it just, from that moment, it just kind of, like, emboldened us to be like, all right, well, there's this many people who give a fuck, so we'll just make it for them. And then anyone on top of that was like a bonus. So it was just like, from that point on, I think I was just like, all right, we're in business here. This is going to be...
You play any big festivals on that cycle then, on the Hope cycle?
Well, after the record came out, we didn't even do, like, our own headline tour. We went out with My Chemical Romance.
That was before the record came out. That was just before...
I was going
to bring this up at one point because it seemed that 2011 was a very busy year for you guys. So I did a little bit of research before this, and I don't know if you guys were ever home, because you announced everything in January, right? February, you did the My Chemical Romance Arena Tour. You went straight from that to Australia for Southway Festival, came back, did a UK headline with Hiro and the Swellers, left for Europe supporting Fuel for a Friend, and then you did all the summer festivals where you did Merthyr Rock and Reading and Leeds and all that, and then ended the year with another headline tour of the UK with support from Weird the Ocean and Canterbury. So, very busy 2011.
Yeah, that was the best year. That was the peak year. Like, we did the biggest headline shows we'd ever done on that year. That was the Roundhouse headline gig and Birmingham Academy, which was probably, there were like three big gigs, like three Manchester, Birmingham, London, and I think All Eyes were on London because it was going to be London and London, 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 but I think Birmingham might have been the best of three. Birmingham was mental, just absolutely mental crowd.
Birmingham Academy is a great venue, isn't it, when it's heaving?
And it was absolutely heaving, like, all the way to the back. It was just, the crowd were fucking amazing. And yeah, I think we did Reading and Leeds that year. Did you say we did Reading and Leeds? Yeah,
we did. Yeah, he said we did all the festivals. All so Reading, Leeds, and Merthyr Rock.
Including Sean.
Including, you know.
Could you slam dunk that year as well?
Did we do Download that year? Was that the year with the two drummers?
Mm.
Or was that the year after?
It might have been the year after, I think. Because I'm looking at it now and it just says, I've got, in March and April, a group went on the UK tour alongside Swellers and Jairo De Hero. That was before he changed to The. We released Never By Your Side music video 10th of May. Yeah, the group appeared at Reading and Leeds Festival in August before headlining the main stage of Merthyr Rock in September. So that was that then. And then, yeah, we brought You're Not Alone, the music video, out after Merthyr Rock, because if you watch the You're Not Alone video, that's us playing Merthyr Rock, I think.
It is, yeah. Predominantly, yeah.
A lot of it.
Yeah, side note, there's a very embarrassing moment in that music video of me with the whole crowd. Goes to the crowd and just see me looking the opposite way. So there's a tidbit for you.
Which turned out to be a giant metaphor for this podcast, really.
But yeah, 2011, though, it seemed that that was a non-stop year for you guys with this record.
Yes.
Yeah, I think if we had gone to Australia... Did you say that we... Yeah, we did, didn't we? We did go to Australia. Yeah. Oh, it was 100% the best year we ever did then, I think.
100%.
Because of all that. We went from that My Chem tour, which was fucking fantastic. They were amazing to us. They were one of the best headline bands, I think, in terms of kindness that we'd ever come across. And then we went to Australia and turned up at the first gig, and there was two bottles of champagne in our dressing room from My Chem, which was bonkers.
That's nice, isn't it?
It was nice.
Absolutely unbelievable.
With 5 O's.
Yeah, they didn't have to do any of that. We were just unbelievably happy to be supporting them. And then for them to, you know, be like, oh yeah, remember you were on tour with us a couple of days ago,
guys? That year was just like the perfect like rhythm of what you want from like an album release year, because we had this big tour right at the beginning, like a month, like 2 months before the record came out, which put us in front of a bunch of people who were perfect for us, but probably a lot of them hadn't heard of us because it was My Chem, oh my God, there's My Chem. Oh, look, another band, also dressed in black. That'll do.
There's so many bands I remember talking to after the Mike Kemp tour, and that was their first kind of like experience with us. Because, like you said, they were huge shows, putting us in front of so many people.
And then you ended it at the end of the round. I went to that round house gig and it was brilliant. It really was. I remember being really proud watching you and just not being proud so much, but just being stoked for you. Yeah. Just stoked for your mates to think, oh, that must be great doing that. I hope they're enjoying this.
Yeah, we were. I was anyway. I loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a photo on my Instagram of me and you up in the rafters, Jace, up in the rafters of the roundhouse.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like an hour before we went on, and I remember that.
Didn't you have a thingy? What's it called?
It's Segways. That wasn't that time. That was a different time, I think.
There was a Kerrang tour.
Yeah, it was. But it was the roundhouse, but it wasn't that time.
Great gig, though. Really good gig, that. It was amazing.
Was it that gig we had the sparkle drop? The sparkle waterfall?
Yes, it was, yeah. During
You and your friends?
This is why we can't have nice things. Because, we had... Josh came out, didn't he? And Josh came out and sang with us, and we had to warn him away from the sparkle drop and the cannons or whatever. So that tour, then, must have been the roundhouse one where we pranked Matthew.
Was it that one?
I don't know if it was. It was definitely at the roundhouse. I don't know if it was that tour, but for argument's sake, it was.
I want to say it was.
Yeah,
I want to say it was just because of how furious he was. I think if it was any of the other dates that we did there when we supported anyone, I don't think it would have been a big deal to him. I think it was such a big deal because it was our headline show. We decided to, instead of put a microphone up for him, put a dildo.
No, he still had to take it to the side. So he still had a mic, but if he had to sing in it, he had to approach the item. Do you know what I mean? I think that was where the beauty of it really lay, I felt.
And he did not like it. Oh, no. But yeah, what a tour. What a time for us. That was genuinely some of the best times. And then, it took us 2 years after that then till Start the Party came out.
Well, the party ended. Then the party was over.
No. We did. Party was over, you, Jace. And then we.
I ruined that party.
Yeah, and then we ended up doing Wolves.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, which was all right, actually.
Wolves
was great. Right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
In Cardiff.
We went to Mono Valley to do the drums, I think.
Oh, I love Mono Valley.
Yeah, it was gorgeous. I knew the bit of the world it was in, but I was just like, this place is amazing. So yeah, we did the drums in there, and then we went back and did the guitars with Rom in Soundwave. But that was great. We're just doing Hope today, but Wolves would be, don't get me on the start the party one. You want to get me back for Wolves, I'll talk about Wolves. But.
Fair enough. As we wind down to the end of this, is there any other kind of memories of just this time for the Blackout and this era or the record or anything that really stands out, or maybe some other little achievements that in that time that you're proud of? Because I think Hope was actually your highest charting record as well.
Did you win any Kerrang Awards or anything for that record?
We won one for keeping showing up.
Devotion Awards
for coming every year.
That wasn't that. I think that was probably start.
It was later. We never won a legit one.
We won. It was like dedication or what? Like literally. I went on stage drunk and I described it as you've been nominated four times and won fuck all award.
It was like the participation award at like the sports. Do you know what I mean? It was just like you just show up every week and they go, give him a trophy, man. They're only a quid.
Clubman. We were Kerrang Clubman of the week. We were Clubman of the year. Fucking brilliant.
So what was your highlight of that album and the whole thing? And you know, what was your big memory of Hope?
I'm just really happy about what it was as a thing, like as a full like. As a complete package in terms of like the way it looked, the way it sounded, what was on it, the variation of the songs on it, the lyrics. I was just really, really, really proud of that record. I'm also really going back to what Morgan was saying about the kind of fan reaction. I think it was really quite humbling to see how much it resonated with so many people. Like you just keep getting people coming up to you and be like, I love that album. People will say it saved their life. People would say that it changed their life. People said that it's their favorite thing ever. And you're like, holy fucking shit. Like, we just did a bunch of cool tunes and hoped that people liked it. And it's always great when somebody likes it, but when somebody like internalizes it and takes it on to that extent, it's kind of, I don't know what to say to people when they say stuff like that to me, because like saying thanks just seems like such a trivial, oh, thanks for that. Bye then. You know what I mean? Like, you just have to be like, I'm not really equipped to be able to say thank you enough for being that nice about it.
I think it was like a time and a place. Like the whole theme of the album is about us kind of being lost in the woods and being out there, not really knowing what's going on. And that's basically teenage years, isn't it? I think that's why it resonated so much, is just because that's what everyone goes through when they're growing up. Everyone thinks that, you know, they're on their own or no one really kind of gets them. And I think that's what kind of resonated. I think we just happened to be in this space where we were like, oh shit, what's going on? How are we going to get through the next God knows how many years? And then that kind of just encapsulates what our fans kind of probably went through at the time.
I wish Prince had heard it.
I don't.
Why? Okay. I'm glad he didn't.
Might have saved his life.
Where's it?
That was happening this week.
It was such a good album, such a good time for us.
That album saved my life. Play to Prince.
I thought to give Prince a shout.
Yeah, not you.
Oh, we've gone. But it connected so well with the audience, and I think, that's definitely where we missed out next with Start the Party, I guess. I think I thought they were growing up with us. We were partying and having a good time and looking positive, and turns out doesn't seem to be the case for anybody at the time.
In retrospect, it's like everything went too well with Start the Party. Like, we were just, all the things that went with Hope that made Hope good then meant that when we came to do the next record, everything was much better because Hope had been good. So we were just coming at it and it kind of like, yeah, everything's cool. Oh yeah. And everything was just kind of like, not entirely straightforward. You know, we had some issues with like little bits and bobs, but it was like, we had a label. We still had a label. We still had the same management. We still, like, there was a lot of continuity and a lot of things were just like set up in such a way that you just felt a bit more comfortable in doing what you were doing. I just didn't translate, I think, through to being, for me at least. I think a lot of my thing about Start the Party is like,
the songs aren't as good. The songs on Hope are way better.
Yeah, I agree. I also think I probably colour my perception of Start the Party based on what Start the Party did. So like, it didn't do that well as a record in comparison. And it also just, it started this sort of decline that eventually we just couldn't get like out of. So it was like, it was the starting point of all of that stuff. So there's probably, that's all like wrapped up in it as well. But yeah, it's just not as good a record as Hope. It's simple as that.
And I'm sorry to ask this, Bob especially, but I've got to, because gotta play devil's advocate, because I'll get nasty comments from people listening if I don't. With it being the 10th year anniversary, if festivals or gigs or anything like that do go ahead next year, there was an offer that came in to kind of maybe celebrate this in any way with a big show or anything, would that be something you guys would be open to? Or
Jason, with you?
Oh, you've been asked this before. I'd go. If you ask it, I'd go.
Well, based on the current situation, you might be the only one who's allowed in there. So.
Yeah.
Are you asking me?
Well, Sean, Gav, and Bob, yeah. Okay. But
well, everyone knows my fucking thoughts on it.
We know. And
I talk about it every week
to a dead man.
Putting my kids through college. Maybe.
Hey, well, yeah, she's saying the last chance.
One in a million. So you've seen is a chance.
And that was way off.
I suppose it's on you. Unless Gavin changed his mind. And now Gavin's like, Bob's like, oh, do you know what? I do it now. And Gavin's like, do you know what? Fuck you. I'm not going to do it now. Which would be perfect. But
we swap it out every year.
Just keep it fresh.
Who's got the hold up card this year?
I think we should get Bob to do it, and then Bob agrees and he sends us a sound check and we go, it's Start the Party only. Where's Bob gone? He's walking off.
he's walking around a field. He wanted to do it only one take.
Walking around a field.
Right, I'll see you boys on tour next year then. I've got to go. I've got to my son driving.
Driving?
Yeah.
What, like learning to drive?
Learning to drive, yeah.
When did he become 17? That's crazy.
Zach's 18 now.
Wow.
Zach's 18 in 2 weeks.
Jesus Christ. That's
insane.
He was about 8 when he did this record, I reckon.
If you had to guess, like,
somewhere in the ballpark of 8, 9, chap of about 8 in jeans.
What's his name? Really?
Todd, really? Seriously?
Todd. Todd, what?
Can you read anymore?
Nazis, right. But with extra facilities. Outside the Nazis.
Cross wires. Anyway, yes. thank you very much.
Can I say something genuine and lovely and heartwarming at the end? I love you guys. You're very lovely, special, lovely people. And the best thing about making music is meeting people that you'd be friends with forever because you've got a connection. And we'll always have a connection around some of the good and bad records we made together. And you're all lovely, amazing people. And you as well, Morgan. So keep up the good work. You're all very special and very dear to me. And I love you all so much.
You too, Jace.
Please send me the
You changed our lives.
Same goes to you. Yes, you did. Yeah. For the better. Not for the worst. Like some
<Ruined our lives. laughs>
yeah.
Well,
But yeah, thank you so much. Cheers, Bob. Cheers, Gav.
It's been very nice going down memory lane and reminiscing about this album and everything. If there's anything you guys would like to plug at the end of this, you can. I know, Jason, you've been busy recording, but is there anything I would like to mention before we wrap this up?
Jace, who are you working with at the moment? Anybody good?
What's going on?
All right, anybody good?
They are good. They're very
good. It's a joke, man. It's a joke.
On your podcast. Yeah, working with Don Broco. The album sounds really great. And a band called Chapter 13, who are amazing. Yeah.
They still do Chapter 13, yeah?
Yeah, you should hear their stuff. It's incredible. So good.
Sean and I still have a band called Raiders that still exists despite the external perception that it might not, because we haven't done much for a while. There is a song that one day might come out if we're allowed to do something about it with them, make a bit of a promotional thing, and then you can see it. And it's a very good song. And then there'll be more songs in the future, provided we're allowed to be together so that we can write the songs.
Nice.
You've got this music business thing licked, Bob.
Hmm?
You've got this new music business thing nailed.
Yeah.
More done.
Gav, is there anything you want to plug?
I'm taking the kids to school tomorrow.
Ooh. So people can wake up and see you.
So they can come to the gates of...
Well, look out, get in the...
I'm still working at all about the merch printing, t-shirt printing. I've been here, pretty much since the band's broke up. So we still open, surprisingly, since the lockdown. But if you need merch, give me a holler on 01685.
info@allaboutemerch.com. Right,
right. Yeah. Thank you. Cheers, guys.
Nice one, boys.
Love you guys.
You're listening to Sapping Podcast.
Yeah. I love seeing and hearing from Jason Perry.
Yeah.
I love it.
One of my favourite things is him and Bob together, because they just wind one another up so much. Comedy gold, man.
You couldn't have people from two polar opposites really come together. You got Jason, who I reckon 90% of the time is super happy, loving life, trying to improve everyone's lives, make them better, show you how life is all right. And you've got Bob N, who literally wants everybody on earth to be on fire at the same time.
It's true. But it was lovely to reminisce and get those stories from, you know, a record that was very important to you and this fan base and everything like that. As I've mentioned in the conversation, the amount of people I know with Hope-related tattoos is a high number. And so, you know,
bonkers.
I think a lot of people will enjoy this.
Oh, if anyone's got a Hope tattoo or any Blackout-related tattoos, please get in touch on at Sapping Pod on Twitter and Instagram, because we want us. I'd love to see them. Also, there's somebody out there, there's a fella I met at Merthyr Rock years ago who has a tattoo of me on his forearm. Now, that tattoo could have easily been made into a Jedward tattoo. Another nod to Jedward, look. That's twice now, one episode. But I'd love to see that now and see the person again. So if anybody knows who that was, I'm sorry I forgot your name. I shouldn't have forgot your name, obviously, because you've got me tattooed on your skin forever.
Yeah.
But also, you did make that mistake of having me tattooed on your skin forever. So that's not my fault, but also, give a bloody look at it. I'd love another look.
Yeah, I just want to know what's happened to it. Because, like, can we talk about it?
I want to see how it's aged. They bound to have covered it up.
Maybe.
I'd have covered it up.
Yeah.
Just because... Yeah, you've got, oh, this fella used to be in a band, that is. What?
but I was surprised to hear how much of an influence on songwriter Reese was on this record.
Yes. Well, that's the thing. It's like when Jason come along, we just all started like throwing ideas out there. Like there's a part on Hope. We didn't mention this in the thing. There's a part on the song Hope, if you have a listen to it, when it starts. And you can hear, like, harmonics on the guitar. Well, I was literally just sitting in the studio at the time, just playing them on Matthew's guitar, pissing about, and Jason was like, oh, they fit perfectly over the top. It kind of sounds like a jewellery box or whatever. And I was like, oh, cool. And then that ended up on the record. So, yeah, we all had a bash. But, yeah, Reese was very prolific on this record as well, higher and higher and... Black Eyed Reese, as it was called, originally. Jason thought it sounded like Black Eyed Peas if you put a woo!
That's true.
But yeah, it was super good to hear all those stories and just be reminded of mad shit I've done and songs we've got to put out. It's just bonkers. It's still mad to me to this day.
Yeah, and I quite enjoy doing episodes like this. It's a little bit different, getting a few people together and dissecting a certain subject or thing. So maybe we should be looking at doing a couple of other specials like this in the future, whether it's more Blackout anniversary stuff or just things of bands we have a good relationship or friendship with or something like that. So if you're listening and go, oh, I know what they should do, give us some suggestions at Sapnin Pod on Twitter and Instagram.
Here's a suggestion. Let's get Don Broco on to talk about a record they did with Jason Perry.
Ooh, that would be good. That would be good and ties in nicely to this.
Yeah. Let's get Machine on and, get somebody the Machine's work with on and we'll have a chat with them. I quite like this producer and band's chat thing. So, yeah, like, I'm always up for hearing hidden things in records and, you know, crazy moments and stuff and good recording out there, recording techniques or whatever. So, yeah, it could be good. Like, maybe if we did, like, The Used and Feldy.
Oh, now we're talking, like, Sean. Well, we've got the power, so we might as well go fucking mad with it and just use it for evil.
When do we turn into He-Man? We've got the power! Fucking hell, we do one fucking podcast with Mikey Way and that's it. You get followed by Mikey Way on Twitter and that's it. Now you're fucking Billy Big Bollocks.
Oh, not only that, we followed you on Instagram as well this week now. So me and Mikey Way are best friends, I reckon.
It's mad, isn't it? It's fucking mad, isn't it? Oh, he gets one follow off fucking Mikey Way and he thinks he's a fucking dog's blocksman.
Well, nutter. You know, hey, if there's any proof to suggest that, it's that, innit? So, at @MHRichards_ on Twitter and Instagram, if you want to do what Mikey Way from My Chemical Romance did this past week.
I love how you can do that. Hey, guys. I know you're probably not as cool as... I'm trying to think of somebody cool who follows me now. Hey, guys, are you as cool as... Fuck, flick through my book, beer. If you guys want to be as cool as Josh Franceschi, I suggest you follow me on Instagram @FakeSeanSmith or on Twitter @SeanSmithSucks.
Get him in there, innit? Get him in there. Just a couple of things I wanted to mention very quickly is... we should say a massive happy birthday celebrations this weekend for someone who's not only important to both of our lives, Sean, but the podcast and the Blackout, and the wonderful Hayley Connolly.
Oh, happy birthday, Hayley. Thank you ever so much for everything you've ever done for me. That's making the Blackout surprisingly popular. That's getting us in magazines and on radio and getting in us interviews. There's your love that you've given to us, which is amazing. The things you help with the podcast are fantastic. You're an absolute superstar. I love you very much. And hopefully by now you've seen the video that me and the Blackout Boys did for you.
Also, am I right in saying that she's technically on Hope? Because I had a look and... somewhere she is credited as being a part of Gan Vocals, if that's a thing.
Yeah, well, I think, yeah, what we did was when we were recording the album, we had sections where we wanted gangs and girls and stuff like that on. So Hayley came along. Claire Maxwell was involved as well.
Nice.
Was our day-to-day manager at the time of Raw Power, but yeah, Hayley was involved. And I wonder how many people would have heard of us if it wasn't for Hayley. So thank you very much, Hayley. Happy birthday. I love you very much. Thank you very much for everything you've done for me and my friends. You're an absolute superstar.
Yes, and speaking of bands you are in, today is Bandcamp Friday, and the first of every month, Sean, they do something very nice for artists around the world. So tell us about that.
Yes, so while this virus is still about, Bandcamp are donating 100% of the money made on Bandcamp Friday to the artist. So if you know anybody in a band who has a Bandcamp, today is the day to support them, because Bandcamp doesn't take a fee, so all money will go to the artist. So yeah, I'm in a band called Raiders. Please check it out, raidersbanduk.bandcamp.com. But that's not the only reason we wanted to mention it. But if you know anybody else who's got a Bandcamp, today is the day to support them. If you're listening to this on Friday, if you're not, you have to wait till bloody the first Friday of next month. So, yes, check it out. RaidersBandUK.bandcamp.com.
Yes, and before we wrap things up, obviously, if you've enjoyed this episode, reach out to us on social media to let us know. But we would love you forever and a day if you could head over to our Patreon page, patreon.com/sapnin, to check out all the extra bundles and rewards and bonus content you can get for being a supporter of Sapnin, as well as being included to our wonderful community of people who are literally our favorite of all time. They make us smile every day and help this thing happen each and every week. So if you head over to patreon.com/sapnin, you'll be able to see more information there. But we do need to give a massive shout out to the elite members of our Patreon community. If you head over to the description of this episode, there's loads of names there that we need to thank, but Sean's going to read out their top tier names for you now, and some of them might have changed to be funny, some of them might have not. We'll find out.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Thank you very much, Kylie Wheeler, Mayumi Liwaway, Janelle Castan, Mitch Perry, Emma Barber, Dilly Grimwood, Nathan Croshaw, Kelly Young, Paul Hirschfield, Scooby Drew Styles, Mikey McDonald's McMuffin Buns, Liam Connolly, Kelly Irwin, Kat Besant, Sammy G, Amadine Urbano, Shani Meyer Boxel Anderson, Tony Michael, Sarah James, Justin Dunn, Dana Lasnova, Amy Campion, Johnny Phillips, Scott Jones, Murray Grimwood, Dan Gies, TJ, what's the best thing about Switzerland? I don't know, but the flag is a big plus. Ambler Shaddock. Thank you very much to Simon Amos, Kate Stevenson, Jenny Sexy Boy Munster, Danny Eaton, or Yunad Note, as he's changed his name to, Lucy Diaz, Emily Senegals, Martina McManus, Erin Howard, Becky Andy, John and Emma, Jenny Robinson, Jason Heredia, Louis Cook, Marcy Jacobson, Caroline Robinson, Kelly Cannon, Kevin Clark, Carl Pendlebury, Livy Cropper, Stuart McNaught, James McNaught. Oh, happy birthday to Stuart McNaught for last week. Thanks to Tallulah Grant, Lydia Henderson, Sharif Awadali, Craig Harris, Keris Andrews, Ollie Say Something Naughty Here, Amesbury, Chris Howard, Jacob Turner, Josh, I have a fear of German sausages, I always fear the worst, Chris. Alice Wood, Adam King of the Goth, Parslow, and last but no means least, Connor Lewins and his fantastic family. Thank you very much to all of those people. Thank you very much to everybody mentioned in the description. Thank you very much to anybody who's ever been involved with the Patreon. It literally keeps us going at this point, and yeah, it means the absolute world to us for anybody who's joined. Yeah, you're absolute superstars. I know I say this every week, but it genuinely is keeping us going, so thank you very much. You're all stars and we love you very much. Check out the Patreon, patreon.com/sapnin, because lately it's also become sort of some sort of love fest, I've noticed.
Yeah, well, everyone's always supported each other, but a little bit extra lately with everything going on. But we mean it each and every week. It means the world to us, and we wouldn't be able to keep this thing going if it wasn't for it. So patreon.com/sapnin, come and join the family. But yeah, we'll be back now next Friday with another fantastic guest for you to sink your ears into.
You are? We got to do one next Friday as well.
Yeah, like every Friday, like we've been doing for the last 123 weeks, Sean. It's a long time.
This podcast is taking forever, man. Can't we just do one and then just do another one in the future or something? Or do we have to keep going every week?
Well, it's fun. It's more fun to do every week. It's stressful, but it is more fun.
All right, fair enough, and let's keep going. Yeah, we will be back next week with episode 124, where we will be talking to a band about their new album. Ooh, ooh, ooh. You can't see this, but I'm doing magic hands. Mysterious. But yes, thank you very much to everybody who's listened to this. At Sapnin Pod on Twitter and Instagram, patreon.com/Sapnin, at Raiders Band UK on Twitter and Instagram, and raidersbanduk.bandcamp.com to listen and purchase the music. At MHRichards_ on Twitter and Instagram for Morgan. At Sean Smith Sucks on Twitter for me. At Fake Sean Smith on Instagram. Those names are the reason I cannot get verified. Anyway. Fucking Sapnin!
Sapnin!
You're listening to Sapnin Podcast with Sean Smith and Morgan Richards. Thank you very much for downloading this podcast or streaming it, or I don't know what else you do with podcasts. Thank you very much.